In Romans chapter 8 and verse 28, a very special blessing is mentioned. The Apostle Paul was the inspired writer, and he said, "We know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose." That's a very special blessing that's in store for certain people, those who love God, those who are the called according to his purpose. That great principle is illustrated numerous times throughout the Bible. We see God working things together in the lives of his people for their ultimate good. And that passage doesn't say that everything that happens to God's people is good. We know better than that. The Bible never says that. But it does say that all things work together for the ultimate good of God's people. This particular principle is illustrated in a powerful way, in my judgment, in the book of Esther. We see that God's people were in a bad way. They suffered some difficulties, but God was working all things together for their ultimate good. Well, let's look at a review of the first seven chapters of the book of Esther that we've covered so far. In chapter 1, the king of Persia at the time was a man named Ahasuerus, and he removed his queen. Her name was Vashti. She was a very beautiful woman, and he called upon her to appear before him and his friends. She refused, and consequently, she was removed from being queen. That brings us to chapter 2. A new queen was selected. Her name was Esther. She was a beautiful, young, Jewish woman. Now, she had been raised by Mordecai, but he had instructed her not to inform anyone that she was Jewish, and she did as he instructed her. But she was chosen to be the new queen. In chapter 3, we're introduced to a man named Haman. The king appointed him to a very high position. Sort of in our way of thinking today, he would have been considered to be like a prime minister. He had a very high position in the Persian government. But he came up with a plot to kill all of the Jewish people, and he manipulated the king into making that an official law. And, as we will point out tonight in our study, the laws of the Medes and the Persians could not be altered. Once they became official, we would say they were written in stone. They could not be changed at all. Well, Haman got the king to make a law which said that all of the Jewish people would be destroyed. In chapter 4, Mordecai got Esther involved in this difficult situation. Chapter 5, she appeared before the king, and she asked the king and Haman to attend a banquet that she had prepared. At that banquet, she asked them to attend another banquet the next day. Now, we know how the king felt about banquets and feasts and parties and so forth. As the book begins, there was a 180-day feast, and if that was not enough, there was a 7-day feast that followed. So it seems that the king enjoyed going to feasts and banquets and parties and so forth. I think Esther knew that, and she was using that to her advantage, for what it's worth. Bible doesn't specifically say that, but if you read between the lines, I think you'll see that was taking place. Mordecai got Esther involved in this situation, and we know how she dealt with it. Now, between those two banquets, according to chapter 6, the king bestowed a great honor upon Mordecai. Haman was absolutely humiliated. Now, Haman thought that he was going to receive a high honor from the king. That wasn't the case. He made a suggestion about what should be done to the man that the king delighted to honor. And the king said, okay, do that to Mordecai. You see, Mordecai had been responsible for saving the king's life. There was a plot to kill the king, and that was known to Mordecai. He reported that to Esther. Esther reported that to the king. That was searched out, found to be true, and the two men responsible for that were executed, and it was written down in the book of records for the king. But Mordecai received no honor for what he had done. He had not received any type of reward. Well, he got his reward eventually. Mordecai was honored greatly, but Haman was greatly humiliated. In chapter 7 that we studied last week, Esther pointed out the wickedness of Haman, and Haman was put to death. Now, he had prepared some gallows for hanging Mordecai. He was hung on those very gallows that he had made. That brings us to chapter 8 that we want to cover this evening. And we find in this chapter that another law was put in place that would allow the Jews to defend themselves against their enemies. That's basically what chapter 8 is about. Let's first look at verses 1 and 2. We will see that Mordecai was promoted. On that day did the king Ahasuerus give the house of Haman, the Jews' enemy, unto Esther the queen. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told what he was unto her. And the king took off his ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it unto Mordecai. And Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. Verse 1 begins by showing that the king gave Haman's possessions to Queen Esther. The latter part of verse 1 indicates that Esther finally revealed her relationship with Mordecai. You see, Mordecai had raised her because her parents had passed away, but they were actually related. And finally, Esther revealed her relationship to Mordecai, to the king, and consequently, verse 2 says that the king promoted Mordecai to that position that Haman had. Now, as I said earlier, we would consider that to be something similar to a prime minister's position today. So this was a very high position. It had been given to Haman. Haman's out of the picture now. That position was then given to Mordecai. Remember, he's related to Esther. And the welfare of all the Jewish people was at stake. Well, the latter part of verse 2 teaches that Esther put Mordecai in charge of the possessions of Haman that the king gave to her. So Mordecai received quite a promotion. Now let's look at verses 3 through 6 in just a moment. We will see that Esther came before the king on behalf of her people. But before we look at that, we need to keep in mind exactly what was taking place. This runs as a narrative. It's a complete story. And to appreciate what's revealed in one chapter, we need to keep in mind what's already been revealed. Well, after Mordecai received this high promotion, it would certainly appear that things were much better for the Jews. One of the Jewish men received that high position in the Persian government. But there was a problem. Remember, there was a law put in place which said that all of the Jews would be destroyed. Now let's go back to chapter 3 for just a moment and be reminded of that. Chapter 3, let's start at verse 12. Then were the king's scribes called on the 13th day of the first month, and there was written according to all that Haman had commanded unto the king's lieutenants, and to the governors that were over every province, and to the rulers of every people of every province according to the writing thereof, and to every people after their language. In the name of a king Ahasuerus was it written, and sealed with the king's ring. And the letters were sent by post into all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to cause to perish all Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day, even upon the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month Adar, and to give the spoil of them for a prey. A copy of the writing for a commandment to be given in every province was published unto all people, that they should be ready against that day. So not only did Haman's plot become an official law, it was spread throughout the king's empire that this was to take place. Now notice that it would be about a year before that came to pass. The letter went out in the first month. The 12th month was the time chosen for killing all of the Jews. You see, that law was still effective. Now, in the chapter that we're studying tonight, Haman is out of the picture. Mordecai now has his position. It would certainly appear from that the Jews would be much better off, but that law was still in effect, which said all of the Jewish people were to be destroyed. And, as we've alluded to earlier, the laws of the Medes and the Persians could not be altered. Go back to chapter 1 and verse 19. Chapter 1 and verse 19 says, "If it please the king, let there go a royal commandment from him, and let it be written among the laws of the Persians and the Medes, that it be not altered." So once a law became effective, once it went into place, it could not be changed. So in chapter 8, Mordecai has been promoted to a very high position in the Persian government that would certainly appear to benefit the Jewish people, but that law was still in effect. Now there are several other verses in the book of Daniel that indicate that the Persian laws could not be altered. Let's look at Daniel chapter 6 and verse 8. Remember that Daniel was among those taken captive from Judah by the Babylonians. But he had a position in the government when the Persians and the Medes conquered the Babylonians. He, in turn, had a high position in the Persian government. So we're talking about a very similar time frame here. Not the same time, but very close. Daniel chapter 6 and verse 8. "Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing, that it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not." Okay. That had to do with the plot to get rid of Daniel. Some men were responsible for getting the king to make a law which said that no one could make a request of anyone except the king for a period of 30 days. The king, for some reason, went along with that. Daniel prayed just as he always had, and he made a request of someone besides the king. Of course, the penalty was to be thrown into the den of lions. Verse 12 of the same chapter says, "Then they came near and spake before the king concerning the king's decree. Hast thou not signed a decree that every man that shall ask a petition of any man or God within 30 days, save of thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions?" The king answered and said, "The thing is true according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not." And in verse 15, "Then these men assembled unto the king and said unto the king, Know, O king, that the law of the Medes and Persians is that no decree nor statute which the king establisheth may be changed." Well, why in the world they came up with that law, I don't know. I guess they did not want their laws to be changed. Sometimes politicians are responsible for making laws that need to be changed. Sometimes there are good laws that are changed, and we regret that. But sometimes laws are put into effect that need to be changed. Well, this is a case where the Persians had a law which said that their laws could not be changed. So, in chapter 8 of the book of Esther, we find that a law to destroy all of the Jewish people on one day was still in effect. All right, now let's look at verses 3 through 6 of chapter 8. We will see that Esther did appear before the king on behalf of her people. Verse 3. And Esther spake yet again before the king, and fell down at his feet, and besought him with tears to put away the mischief of Haman the Agagite, and his device that he had devised against the Jews. Then the king held out the golden scepter toward Esther. So Esther arose and stood before the king, and said, If it please the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and the thing seem right before the king, and I be pleasing in his eyes, let it be written to reverse the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, which he wrote to destroy the Jews, which are in all the king's provinces. For how can I endure to see the evil that shall come unto my people? Or how can I endure to see the destruction of my kindred? Well, Esther appeared before the king. Remember, they had another policy which said that if someone appeared before the king uninvited, if the king would extend his scepter to that person, then that person would be allowed to approach the king. If the king did not extend his scepter, then that person would lose his life. So Esther approached the king, and he extended his scepter to her. She was allowed to approach him. She made a request on behalf of her people. She asked the king to reverse that law that had been put on the books. Well, that could not be done. Why? Because of their law, which said that no Persian law could be changed. Well, something else had to be done. That brings us to verses 7 through 14. We'll see that a new law was put into effect. Verse 7. Then the king Ahasuerus said unto Esther the queen and to Mordecai the Jew, Behold, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and him they have hanged upon the gallows, because he laid his hand upon the Jews. Write ye also for the Jews as it liketh you in the king's name, and seal it with the king's ring. For the writing which is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's ring may no man reverse. Then were the king's scribes called at that time in the third month, that is, the month Sivan, in the 23rd day thereof, and it was written according to all that Mordecai commanded unto the Jews, and to the lieutenants, and the deputies, and rulers of the provinces which are from India unto Ethiopia, and 127 provinces, unto every province according to the writing thereof, and unto every people after their language, and to the Jews according to their writing, and according to their language. And he wrote in the king Ahasuerus' name, and sealed it with the king's ring, and sent letters by post, on horseback, and riders on mules, camels, and young dromedaries, wherein the king granted the Jews which were in every city to gather themselves together, and to stand for their life, to destroy, to slay, and to cause to perish all the power of the people and province that would assault them, both little ones and women, and to take the spoil of them for a prey, upon one day in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, namely upon the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month Adar. The copy of the writing for a commandment to be given in every province was published unto all people, and that the Jews should be ready against that day to avenge themselves on their enemies. So the post that rode upon mules and camels went out, being hastened and pressed on by the king's commandment, and the decree was given at Shushan the palace. Well, first, the king gave Esther permission to make a new law on behalf of her people. And that's where it started. Esther approached the king. She asked him to reverse the law that had been made earlier. Well, that couldn't be done. So he gave her permission to make a new law on behalf of the Jews. Mordecai was involved. He wrote the law in such a way, now he has a lot of authority. He's been promoted to the position that Haman had. He has the king's ring. So if he sealed a document with that ring, it was official. Well, Mordecai wrote the law, the new law, in such a way that the Jews would be allowed to defend themselves against their enemies. Now, he couldn't just abolish the law that Haman got put into effect. So I think you'll see a shrewd operator at work here. He couldn't reverse that first law, but he could make a new law. He had the authority to do so. So this new law said that the Jews would be able to defend themselves on that day that was intended for their destruction. And of course, that new law was published throughout the empire. Now Mordecai saw to it that that law was written in various languages so that everyone would understand it. Can you see God working all things together for the good of his people? This is a classic illustration of the blessing that's mentioned in Romans 8 and verse 28. Well, finally, at this point, the Jews were able to rejoice. Verse 15, and Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal apparel of blue and white, and with a great crown of gold, and with a garment of fine linen and purple. And the city of Shushan rejoiced and was glad. The Jews had light and gladness and joy and honor. And in every province and in every city, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a good day. And many of the people of the land became Jews, for the fear of the Jews fell upon them. Notice that the Jewish people finally were able to rejoice, and they had a feast and a good day. You know, earlier, they were very concerned that their lives were going to be taken from them. Now that's been taken care of. They're going to be able to defend themselves against their enemies. So there was a time for feasting and enjoying the day. You know, when people go through a period of difficulty and it finally comes to an end, that's a time for great rejoicing. I don't know how many times I've seen the picture of the sailor kissing the woman, I believe, in downtown New York. I believe that was the location when World War II came to an end. People were on the street. They were very happy. I know some of you remember that. I wasn't born quite yet. But I've seen that picture many times. All the heartache of World War II finally came to an end, and people were ready to rejoice, and did rejoice. Can you begin to imagine how the Jews must have felt? They thought that they were going to lose their lives. You know, that's a cause for concern. And now their problem has been taken care of. So they had a feast and a good day. Now, I think it's interesting that the latter part of verse 17 indicates that a number of people were converted to the Jewish religion. They saw God at work. I doubt that they had ever seen their false gods do anything like that. They knew something about Jehovah working all things together for the good of his people. They saw that. And many people became Jews as a result of what took place. Now, it was possible under the law of Moses for people to be converted to the Jewish religion. People who were converted to the Jewish religion were known as proselytes. They're actually mentioned in that crowd of people in Jerusalem for the day of Pentecost. A number of people were there from various countries, and there were a number of proselytes present as well, people who were converted to the Jewish religion. Not long ago, we studied about the eunuch of Ethiopia. It's apparent that, in my judgment, that he was a convert to the Jewish religion. He was an African man. Besides that, he was a eunuch. It certainly appears that he was converted to the Jewish religion. We know that he had traveled to Jerusalem to worship. That's under the Old Testament system. So it was possible for someone to be converted to the Jewish religion. Let's look at Exodus chapter 12 and read about it. Exodus chapter 12, let's read verses 48 and 49. Now this has to do with the observance of Passover. But in connection with that, notice that some people besides native-born Jews who are mentioned. And when a stranger shall sojourn with thee, and will keep the Passover to the Lord, let all his males be circumcised, and then let them come near and keep it. And he shall be as one that is born in the land, for no uncircumcised person shall eat thereof. One law shall be to him that is homeborn, and unto the stranger that sojourneth among you. So the law made provision for someone to be converted to the Jewish religion. Males would be required to submit to circumcision, and then they would be obligated to keep the law of Moses. Well, as we come to the end of Esther chapter 8, we see that many of the people became Jews. They were converted to the Jewish religion. Well, we see that things are working out for the benefit of God's people. Now, we've mentioned time and again that the great blessing mentioned in Romans 8 and verse 28 is illustrated in the book of Esther. Let's look at a few other verses that are illustrated as well. I think we can begin to appreciate just how true these passages are. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 27. The fear of the Lord prolongeth days, but the years of the wicked shall be shortened. Well, Mordecai feared the Lord, didn't he? He was in danger of losing his life. His life was prolonged. I'm confident that Haman thought he was going to enjoy a long life. His life was cut short. This has to do with the blessing upon those who fear the Lord and the punishment for the wicked. I believe we see Proverbs 10:27 illustrated in the book of Esther. Let's look at chapter 13 and verse 12. This is one of my favorite passages. Hope deferred maketh the heart sick, but when the desire cometh, it is a tree of life. When you hope for something and it's delayed, it's put off, it takes a long time to experience it, it makes us sick. It causes the heart to break. But when the object of that hope is finally realized, when it finally comes to pass, it's compared to a tree of life. Well, I think we see the Jewish people very upset because they were in danger of losing their lives. I believe they were probably hoping for some type of deliverance. We know that Mordecai spoke up and said, God's going to deliver us. But, you know, it was delayed. I'm sure they were anxious, very concerned about their lives. However, Remember at the end of chapter 8, they had a feast and a good day. It was a time for rejoicing. Proverbs 16 and verse 7. When a man's ways please the Lord, he maketh even his enemies to be at peace with him. Once again, you need to recall what happened between Mordecai and Haman. I think you'll see that verse coming to play. And then chapter 29 and verse 2. Proverbs chapter 29 and verse 2. When the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. But when the wicked beareth rule, the people mourn. Now that passage, I think we can see illustrated in the book of Esther. When Haman had that high position, God's people mourned because he wanted to destroy God's people. However, when Mordecai received the position that Haman did have, there was time for rejoicing. I've used this passage many times to illustrate the point that we need to use good judgment when we select the politicians who rule over us. We need to look carefully at positions that they hold and base them on what the Bible teaches. We need to not only look at what they say, but what they do. Now, some people don't like it when I deal with those matters. I stay out of personalities when it comes to politics, but I don't mind dealing with issues because the Bible deals with issues, and we can know the truth based on what the Scriptures teach. But based on what Solomon wrote in this verse, Proverbs 29 and verse 2, we need to use very good judgment when we select the politicians who will rule over us. Because you see, politicians pass laws, which might be good, they may not be good. But we need to think about that very carefully. I've wondered over the years if the king regretted making Haman his prime minister. He made a bad choice. Fortunately, God was in control, and God took care of his people, and eventually Haman was taken care of. Well, in chapters 9 and 10, we will see that the Jews actually destroyed their enemies. The intention was for all the Jews to be destroyed. Didn't work out that way. They were able to defend themselves against their enemies.